ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। To read this evening from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, text 47. Very important verse. Yoginam api sarvesham madgatena antaratmana shraddhavan bhajjate yomam Samayukta tamo mataha yoginam, of yogis, api, also, sarvesham, all types of, mat gatena, abiding in me, always thinking of me, anta Atmana, within himself. Shraddhavan, in full faith. Bhajate, renders transcendental loving service. Yaha, one who. Mam, to me, the Supreme Lord. Saha, he, may, by me, yukta tamaha, the greatest yogi, mataha, is considered. Translation, and of all yogis, the one with great faith, who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service to me, is the most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all, that is my opinion. The 2-page purport by Srila Prabhupada. The word bhajate is significant here. Bhajate has its root in the word bhaj, which is used when there is need of service. The English word, quote, worship, cannot be used in the same sense as bhaj. Worship means to adore or to show respect and honor to the worthy one. But service with love and faith is especially meant for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One can avoid worshipping a respectable man or a demigod and may be called discourteous, but one cannot avoid serving the Supreme Lord without being thoroughly condemned. Every living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus every living entity is intended to serve the Supreme Lord by his own constitution. Failing to do this, he falls down. The Bhagavatam 11.5.3 confirms this as follows. Yat esham purusham sakshat atma prabhavam ishwaram na bhajanti avajananti sthanad brashta patanjada. Doesn't sound good. Anyone who does not render service and neglects his duty unto the primeval Lord, who is the source of all living entities, will certainly fall down from his constitutional position. Paragraph. In this verse, also the word bhajanti is used. Therefore, bhajanti is applicable to the Supreme Lord only, whereas the word worship can be applied to demigods or any other common living entity. The word avajananti, used in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, is also found in Bhagavad Gita. Avajananti mam mudha. Only fools and rascals deride the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. Such fools take it upon themselves to write commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita without an attitude of service to the Lord. Consequently, they cannot properly distinguish between the word bhajanti and the word, quote, worship. Paragraph. The culmination of all kinds of yoga practice lies in bhakti yoga. All other yogas are but means to come to the point of bhakti. In bhakti yoga, yoga actually means bhakti yoga. I said it three times, if you didn't notice. All other yogas are progressions toward the destination of bhakti yoga. From the beginning of karma yoga to the end of bhakti yoga is a long way to self-realization. Karma yoga, without fruitive results, is the beginning of this path. When karma yoga increases in knowledge and renunciation, the stage is called jnana yoga. When jnana yoga increases in meditation on the super soul by different physical processes, and the mind is on him, it is called ashtanga yoga. And when one surpasses the ashtanga yoga and comes to the point of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, it is called bhakti yoga, the culmination. Factually, bhakti yoga is the ultimate goal, but to analyze bhakti yoga minutely, one has to understand these other yogas. The yogi who in progression is, the yogi who is progressive and therefore on the true path, the yogi who is progressive is therefore on the true path of eternal good fortune. One who sticks to a particular point and does not make further progress is called by that particular name, karma yoga, jnana yogi, dhyana yogi, raja yogi, hatha yogi, etc. If one is fortunate enough to come to the point of bhakti yoga, it is to be understood that he has surpassed all other yogas. Therefore, to become Krishna conscious is the highest stage of yoga. Just as when we speak of Himalayan, we refer to the world's highest mountains, of which the highest peak is Mount Everest, is considered to be the culmination. Paragraph. It is by great fortune that one comes to Krishna consciousness on the path of bhakti yoga to become well situated according to the Vedic direction. The ideal yogi concentrates his attention on Krishna, who is called Shyama Sundara, who is as beautifully colored as a cloud, whose lotus face is as effulgent as the sun, whose dress is brilliant with jewels, and whose body is flower garlanded. Illuminating all sides is his gorgeous luster, which is called the Brahmajyoti. He incarnates in different forms, such as Ramana, Sringa, Varaha, and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he descends like a human being, as the son of Mother Yashoda. And he is known as Krishna, Govinda, and Vasudev. That was one sentence. He is the perfect child, husband, friend, and master. And he is full with all opulences and transcendental qualities. If one remains fully conscious of these features of the Lord, he is called the highest yogi. And the last paragraph. This stage of highest perfection in yoga can be attained only by bhakti yoga, as confirmed in all Vedic literatures, quoting Shri Tushvatara Upanishad, yasya devi para bhaktir yata devi tata garo tasyaite katita hyarta prakashante mahatmanaha. Only unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. And then he quotes another Gopal Tapani Upanishad. Bhakti rasya bhajanam tad iha mutropadi nairasyen dya mushmim manak kalpanam etad eva naishkarmyam. Translation. Bhakti means devotional service to the Lord, which is free from desire for material profit, either in this life or the next. Devoid of such inclinations, one should fully absorb the mind in the Supreme. That is the purpose of naishkarmya. And the last paragraph is one sentence long. These are some of the means for performance of bhakti or Krishna consciousness, the highest perfectional stage of the yoga system. And that's the end of the chapter. So, there's only half an hour to speak on this. Well, the yoga ladder is just gesture in the direction rather than expand on it. The whole of Bhagavad Gita subject matter is bhakti. In Baladev Vidyabhusan's commentary, he glosses the first six chapters and he says in summary that the essence of all of them, well, the some speak of this, this, and this, the essence is nishkam karma, as is the reference of this final reference to the Gopal Tapani Upanishad. Nishkam karma, if you remember back to chapter 2, Krishna has explained Sankhya, the first portion, and says, now I'm going to explain Bodhi Yoga. And Bodhi Yoga requires one thing. Vyavasayatmika Bodhi Ekeha Kudanandana. And the obstacle of that one thing, well, it's two obstacles. The combined obstacle of not getting it, there were not this body, and then the consequent attachment to the fruits of activity, and therefore the theme that's woven through these, according to Baladev Vidyabhusan, through the first six chapters, is detachment from fruit of activities. So going back about 10 verses, in describing the yoga system to Arjuna, Arjuna says, yikes, how is this possible? It seems more difficult to do what you're asking, control the mind, than controlling the raging wind. Krishna says, yep, but it's possible. And then detail is about constant practice and detachment. So then Arjuna has a doubt. I'm paraphrasing in a summary way because of time. I have a doubt. What's that? Well, what happens if I don't make it? I like, but I don't make it. And then I'm neither there nor here. So I'm nowhere. And Krishna explains, of course, that's not so. The unsuccessful yogi is the subject. And again, in Baladev's purport, he's pointing to this bhakti as the way to actually fulfill nishkam karma. In fact, bhakti is the way to dissolve material existence, like including the subtle body, which is the repository of desires, the material ones. And the false ego, our dear friend, and the material intelligence that keeps us very actively engaged in figuring out ways to get fruitive gain, even from the house of bhakti, fruitive, material, doership, happiness kinds of things. Independent thinking from Krishna's happiness. Anything but Krishna's happiness. The solvent is bhakti. It dissolves such tendencies. And it's so important. It takes 6 chapters in as a theme, weaving the theme in and out of gyan and dhyan and karma yoga, this stain that won't go away of fruitive intention, trying to be the enjoyer of what we do and the fruits of what we do, with ourselves at the center, in snagged by false ego. So his point, Father Dave's point, is bhakti can dissolve it. Therefore, it is the best. The others can curb the tendency. Bhakti dissolves the tendency. And the means to dissolve that tendency, the practice, is Shraddhavan Bhajate Yomam. Very simply, Shraddhavan, with faith, Bhajate, engaging in service. I just looked at the commentaries before coming to the class. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points to a Garuda Purana verse where this thing that stated at the beginning of the purport is from the Garuda Purana. Bhajate has its root, or bhakti has its root in the word bhaj, which means service. So it's the impersonalism is curbing the senses. The Vaishnava process is for Krishna, it's no small thing, purifying the senses in the engagement of devotional service. It's not the activity itself, it's the for Krishna consciousness element, the bhakti element, that purifies the sense. It makes what devotional service devotional. Because otherwise, someone can, ring a bell and move a stick of incense in the air. It's not, or play a musical instrument and dance, or, the external appearance of the things that we do in devotional service. Of course, the holy name is there, the sound vibration is there to awaken our dormant Krishna consciousness. The tendency to, again, serve Krishna favorably is awakened through sound vibration. Thank God. But it's the awakening of that tendency that's the devotional component that it brings the topmost stage. Uttama, topmost, yoga, uttama, the topmost system of yoga is the awakening of that consciousness, so that the senses are actively engaged with sense objects, not in a mood of enjoying, but in a mood of service. And if there's not service, the senses are withdrawn. We don't go there. We don't go to places and see things and etc. Taste, smell, touch. We don't engage ourselves in those activities which are not connected to Krishna service. And we don't imagine something to be Krishna service when it's not and call it Krishna service. It's by standard practice, by proper direction. And therefore, this reference, yasya devi para bhaktir, tata devi tata garo, tasyaite katita hyarta prakashante, prakash. The truths become manifest unto such a person who, with implicit faith in Guru and Krishna, they engage in the process of devotional service. Shraddhavan is the connection with the verse. So, conscious submission, recognizing with humility the reality that we're far from that position. We're far from that position. That's okay. Recognizing that you're far from that position is a good beginning to receive the fullness of purification available through submission unto Krishna. And submission unto Krishna includes submission unto representatives of Krishna. There's not, said conversely, there's not submission unto Krishna minus the relationship with those who are in relationship with Krishna. Prabhupada would often quote that reference from Adi Purana where Krishna says to Arjuna, one who claims to be my devotee, he's not my devotee. What? But one who is the devotee of my devotee, that's my devotee. Yasya devi para bhaktir tata deve tata guru. Literally what the verse says is, as one has submission unto the personality of Godhead, one has equal submission to the spiritual master. And to such a person who has such faith, that the prakashante, that all the knowledge of the Vedas becomes revealed. And so, what's that knowledge of all the Vedas? It's Krishna. The relationship, the identity of Krishna and the different features and factors of Krishna. As he discloses them, one can realize them. You know, the potency is there, the potential is there, and then the awakening of bhakti is needed to accomplish all of that. In our acharyas, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is one who's outstanding in this regard, presents these two items that are both required, mercy and submission. Krishna's Kripa Shakti and the devotee's endeavor to positively serve Krishna. The classic is Mother Yashoda trying to bind Krishna and she can't bind Krishna. She's making an endeavor. But because her love is so strong, Krishna exhibits his mercy potency and then she can bind Krishna. So he elaborately explains these two things. The 2 inches too short represents Krishna's compassion or his mercy being extended to the devotee who's trying to serve Krishna with love. That's, you know, the bhakti element. So there's the sadhana stage that we're to be taking up, where according to the standards given within scripture, we practice. And that's also bhakti. And then as that matures, it goes through different stages of further unfolding of bhakti. But the bhakti principle is the principle that removes illusion and discloses reality. So we're under the spell of illusion, thinking wrong things, thinking we're the doer, thinking we're the enjoyer, and so forth, thinking so many foolish things. It takes a faithful person to go beyond that. And that faithfulness connects one with humility, and faith connects one to the awakening of bhakti. And Krishna seeing the bhakti, proportionately Krishna then reciprocates and we progress spiritually. Prabhupada spends a full page delineating this word bhajanti and avajananti, both like the opposite, where if one looks at without bhakti, without the mood of devotional service, hearing about Krishna or hearing about devotional service, hearing about the life of a devotee, people can't understand it. They can't understand it. They think so many things. We're foolish, we're naive, we're wasting our time. You know, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, what is night time for the conditioned soul is a day of awakening, is a time of awakening for the transcendentalist and vice versa. We think they're wasting their time, and they think we're wasting our time. Without the element of bhakti, even Krishna can be standing directly before somebody and they won't recognize. So, to the degree that there's some faith, we can move on the path of bhakti, and unknowingly, even if somebody doesn't have faith, unknowingly, hearing transcendental messages, hearing the holy name and hearing the messages of Bhagavad Gita, it's having an effect because the sound vibration is fully transcendental. So the unsuccessful yogi becomes successful when bhakti awakens, because the unsuccessful, including ourselves, the unsuccessful bhakta, what's holding us back is our strong affinity for being enjoyers instead of Krishna as the enjoyer. The successful yogi of all the different categories comes to this stage where fruit of intention is dissipated by the power of acting simply for the pleasure of Krishna. It's such a small thing. But it's such a big thing. I mean, take any activity. Take book distribution activity, or take deity worship activity, or, you know, being the pot washer activity, or being in charge of something activity. Take any activity. And as long as fruit of intention is there, the happiness isn't there, and being able to recognize Krishna, realize Krishna through the medium of that devotional service isn't there. And so the happiness isn't there, and so the mind is going to here and there. I'll leave the name aside, but I was having a discussion with a devotee while we were in our meeting in Houston, describing, he's very experienced in working with new people. I'm just going to speak, go off a little bit, but come, it's on the topic. It's just, you know, a little bit over here, but it's connected. A young person in the West tendency, and now becoming a worldwide tendency amongst young people, and, you know, young people that don't stop being young. A restlessness. And Prabhupada encountered it, where we're going to be discussing this a little bit tomorrow, but where Prabhupada took something with a very ancient tradition, very long-standing and deep, solid tradition, and brought it to America, where the tendency, the American model, is discard the melting pot place. You know, whatever is your roots and tradition, you just lose it and try new things. Try this one on, try that one on, try this one on, try that one on. So it worked very well. But, and then the same tendency kept replicating itself with Krishna consciousness, the tendency to change this and change that and change this and change that. And Prabhupada spoke like that, you Western boys and girls, you have to change everything. But there's a tradition. So that tendency allowed us to let go of the former being nowhere situation and take something genuine. But then the tendency is to take the something genuine and change it, or just restlessly go from here to there to there. So this devotee that has this experience with new devotees helps people. I'm getting into like institutional things a little bit, but there's a stage where you simply wish people to continue to come, and you do those things that help them continue to come. And then there's some period where do they feel comfortable with being here and, you know, practicing on a regular basis. And then comes a more serious stage of commitment. And with the serious stage of commitment, the restlessness tendency disrupts that or interferes with it. And it's like strong. In part, it's because of the same subject matter, that the real essence of bhakti hasn't been accepted. It's more the newness of this and the newness of that and learning some things. It's, oh, it's very exciting, and then now we learned this thing, then I want to go learn that thing, and I'm going to learn another thing. Restlessness. So the essence of bhakti just slipped through our fingers, where the newness of something was, you know, the new challenge and the new attraction. And one can go on endlessly like that, even within the house of bhakti, and still not get the essence of bhakti. The essence is that which is in relation to Krishna. We accept that which is in relation to Krishna, and according to time, place, circumstance, we utilize that something in service to Krishna. It's application in our real world of what this message means in practical terms. So, not the mind and the conditioned tendencies of the mind to accept something, because sure enough, if we accept on that basis, what follows is rejecting, because that's what the mind does. Sankalpa vikalpa. Accepting, rejecting. And there were, even as we're accepting, the mind is preparing another, oh, that's not exactly that way, another way, and going for a ride on the chariot of the mind. So the bhakti principle is not just acceptance from the mind, it's the mind becomes filled with thought of Krishna. And one's intelligence, going back to chapter 2, one's intelligence is fixed on how to attain Krishna. What is, and that how to attain Krishna is through bhakti. Buddha yoga is actually bhakti yoga. What is pleasing to Krishna? And what is best for me to take up in, as a matter of what is pleasing to Krishna? I need guidance. If it was up to me, I'd probably make a mess of things. Because that's been my history. I make a mess of things. So I need guidance. And then again, this Yasya Devi Para Bhaktir reference towards the end of the purport. And the next one, the reference is this Naishkarmya then is dissipated. Bhakti is where that implicit faith is there. It's beyond our immediate and direct experience, although intuitively or in our heart of hearts we know transcendental reality exists, but we're not there yet. So with implicit faith in Krishna exists and the guidance coming to me to reach Krishna, I can find that connection with Krishna very nicely. In the next verse, Krishna is going to say, now I'm going to tell you how to. But this is establishing the principle. So I'll stop there, see if there's any discussion. Yes.
You were talking about the restlessness of the mind.
Yeah.
How can we help children with restlessness of the mind? Because being in a child's body, it's natural, the tendency is to go from one thing to the other, but how to help them? I can understand as an adult, how to practice that, how to control the mind, but how to help children?
Well, I don't know why you're making that distinction exactly, because adults that can't control their mind are like children. And there are children that can control their mind and they're more controlled than adults. No, did you read that little Vatsasura piece from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, where maybe this is what you mean, that he calls it childishness of children is natural. But so the art he directs is those childish activities or propensities be directed, encouraged, of course, not forced, but directed, encouraged towards Krishna. Krishna-centered. And when happiness is experienced in Krishna-centered activity, then I've seen a child can do, you know, something for a long time and be absorbed in doing something that, although it's not what an adult would do, but it's what a child can do and can do it and do it and do it. So Krishna centerizing those propensities along with the message, you know, so that the child can understand in language, according to the age of the child, that they can understand, you know, doing this has this result and doing that has that result. In a way that parents or adults know how to say those things to children. You know, either by question or by whatever the method. So that there's some consciousness behind the childish activity. At least, in principle, conceptual. Maybe not with matured stage of understanding, but conceptual, basic element of understanding. Okay. Yes.
On the point of happiness in Krishna-centered activities.
Yeah.
One devotee expressed that they that they're afraid, I shouldn't say afraid, that they don't think that their happiness that they're experiencing at their level of Krishna consciousness is necessarily real or pure happiness. And the second is that happiness, if they think I'm happy, they're afraid that might make them complacent. So what would be an appropriate response? Or
depends on the individual, of course, and the circumstances that the, you know, under discussion. Prabhupada didn't warn us, don't be happy, because you might become complacent. His advice was, be happy, chant and be happy. But that happiness that can cause complacency is a self-centered happiness, and then it's, you know, I'm at the center and it's all about me and my happiness. Now I don't have to strive anymore because the misery is gone and it's now happiness. And then when the misery sets in, then I'll stop being complacent and do something again. But you know, that's selfishness and it's fruitive. So through purification and education, the standard of what real happiness is another quality. It's besides, it's not selfish, it's Krishna-centered. It doesn't fade. Complacency is foreign. Complacency is there for people who are fruitive and don't really know what happiness, real happiness is. So one should strive for Krishna's happiness, and that's the standard of happiness. And going back to the first part, well, when I experience happiness, how do I know? I'm not convinced, I'm not sure that it's transcendental happiness. For the most part, it's probably not. Just like a very fair, realistic assessment of us is we're mixed. So there's some real and some other. So what do I do about that? Continue to strive for the real. Assiduously root out the other kinds, or at least neglect or ignore them in favor of the transcendental. And continue to strive like that, according to my capacity, to strive like that. The complacency is more in not striving for that. Not finding happiness causes complacency. When there's genuine humility, and that genuine humility means minimally, I'm a tiny spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna, and I'm in this material atmosphere because I desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. So there's a big humility impetus to remember our condition and call out to Krishna for his protection and his service, and call, when we do our chanting, whether it's japa or kirtan or whatever the form of expression, it's calling for again being connected. And that's not, there will be some happiness in that, and it's not a cause of complacency, it's a cause of further enthusiastic calling. Humility breeds more service, not complacency. Humble appeals for Krishna's shelter and his service. It leads to more service, not complacency. Yeah, something else? Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I just wanted to know, my tendency is that I don't want things to change.
You don't want what to change?
Things like services to change.
You don't want your services to change?
Yeah. Good. But if I'm being indicated by the authority to perform some other service, what should I do? Like, how do I know what Krishna wants?
Here's an answer that Prabhupada gave to a very similar question. One devotee asked Prabhupada, is it okay to be attached to your service? And Prabhupada said, yes. Unless you're then assigned some other service, and then you should give up the attachment to the former service and be attached to the new service, because that's what's assigned to you. So the attachment should be to carrying out service. That's Prabhupada's indication. And that's the position of happiness. It's not this versus that. I mean, we have our nature, and those that are properly situated to guide others understand nature. So they encourage someone to do something according to their nature. But there may be other factors. They may see so many things. They may see, here's some attachment, a material attachment that's tendency being formed. So that's not the ideal. So maybe that's a reason for some other service, or maybe many other factors to consider. So it's certainly okay if asked to say, ouch, I am attached. I really like this service. So there's room for, you know, communication and dialogue. That's so another part of an answer to your question. What do I do when something like that comes? You express. But at the same time, after expressing, the indication, whatever the indication is in conclusion, then accept that. As we just read this morning, when King Pitu, chapter 21 of Canto 4, King Pritu, he just had a big yagya, and Lord Vishnu came, and everyone offered their prayers, and he gave his benedictions to Pritu, and he went back to his kingdom. So he's back in his kingdom, big reception, and now he's addressing demigods and great sages and, you know, learned personalities and rishis, and, you know, so he says, anyone who has a position of king, it is to be understood, is by the grace of the Supreme Lord. And commentary, Prabhupada explains, anyone who has anything, it's by the grace of the Supreme Lord. So that means the service that you're attached to has been given to you by Krishna. So your question, embedded in your question, was how do I know what Krishna wants? Well, Krishna wanted to give you service X, to which you became attached very, you know, nicely. And then if some other indication is there and you express whatever it is that, you know, you wish to continue doing, but something else is indicated, then take that as Krishna's indication also. And it may go back again, but, you know, we're under the care of the internal potency, and it's not that every channel of the internal potency has a transparent pure devotee situated there. But our faith is unto Krishna. And if this isn't what Krishna wants, Krishna will correct it. It's not like I need to put my hand on the chessboard and start moving pieces around. If Krishna wants me to be over here, I'll be over here. Someone else had their hand up? You? Luke? Yeah. This is our last question because we're at 7:30 and we're supposed to end.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. One comment from the purport was Prabhupada mentioned, to perfectly analyze bhakti yoga, one should understand karma yoga and jnana yoga, the other yogas. So you discussed this, kind of that was, you know, implicitly within your discussion. I was hoping you could just address this point.
I heard the first part, but the last sentence you kind of mumbled a little bit, maybe because there was feedback.
I was hoping you could address this statement
Why we must also understand Karma Yoga, Gyan Yoga?
Yeah.
There are elements of, there are subsets of. So, bhakti is the essence, and there are subsets of that essence. So to carefully understand the essence, it helps to understand the subsets of that essence. There are supportive components of nishkam karma, activity that's without attachment, can be understood less perfectly than through the lens of bhakti. But if we look at detached work, detachment from the fruits of work through the lens of bhakti, then we can understand what that important element, detached work. And then the role of knowledge, sambandh gyan, and how does that play into devotion to Krishna? Because after all, one can, just by devotional service, causeless knowledge and detachment come, so we don't need to read books, and we don't need to worry about being attached, we can just do devotional service. But it helps to know what attachment, detachment are, what knowledge and ignorance are. And when done properly, it's not Gyan Yoga, Karma Yoga, but it's Bhakti Yoga and elements of Bhakti Yoga. Okay, we're going to end. Thank you very much, Prabhupada Ki Jai.